Bezos and friends, don't let friends vote for con artists.
Donald Trump, a con artist, will never get control of this party.
But if he does, I will happily serve as his Secretary of State. Right, Marco?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right.
All right.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast. As heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and elsewhere in California and Oregon and Pennsylvania, Hawaii, Ohio, New York, Louisiana, New Mexico, New Hampshire, Arkansas, Washington State, Wisconsin, Virginia, West Virginia, and Minnesota, not to mention a whole bunch of streaming internet sites and your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com, hoping to fit a lot into today's show.
Because there's a lot happening.
Yes, wish us all luck. Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi, and I do wish us all luck.
Yes, thank you.
In all the ways.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you, and I feel you today. Joining us momentarily from across the pond in Ireland is our longtime friend and one of the nation's best national security and accountability journalists, Marcy Wheeler of EmptyWheel.net, to walk us through what Donald Trump's election to a second term in office now means for the four current criminal cases against him, two in federal court, two in state court, including one in which he has already been found guilty by a unanimous jury on 34 counts of fraud related to cheating to win his 2016 election. Hint, in case you weren't already aware, that's because that's how bad our American media is. It means the federal cases will almost certainly go away, and perhaps the state cases as well. But there are quite a few details to discuss on each of those cases, including whether the criminal cases against Trump's co-conspirators can or will move forward anyway, even as Trump serves a second lawless term in office. But quickly, a few updated election results to note, and then some stunning, absurd, ridiculous, but yes, apparently actually happening news about nominations that have been announced by Donald Trump for his new term in office. We'll start with some moderately good election news, if it can even be called that, right here at the top, given everything else is likely to go quickly south from here today.
True.
At the moment, according to unofficial calls from media outlets like AP and the New York Times, Republicans have not yet clinched a majority in the U.S. House next year, though they are now just one seat away from doing so. According to the Times, there are, as we go to air, 11 uncalled seats, 5 favoring Republicans and 6 favoring Democrats at the moment. Though, as noted, Republicans need to win just one of them to win majority control in the lower chamber next year, while Democrats would have to sweep, well, all of them to gain partisan control. No matter what, it appears that Republicans, if they get that majority, as is likely, will now have an even thinner margin than they've had over the past 2 years, when they were unable to accomplish pretty much anything without the support of Democrats. So we'll see what that looks like this year. But some of the candidates in some of the uncalled races have already conceded in some of those contests since we last spoke. A concession, of course, has no legal meaning, and a candidate who has conceded can still win the race, though concessions usually mean that the candidate themselves has decided they are not going to win. To that end, some news out of some of those California U.S. House races out here where we take our time to count.
Because we like to get it right.
Well, we'll see. on Tuesday night, Republican Scott Baugh conceded to Democratic state legislator Dave Minn in a heated race to succeed Democratic California Congresswoman Katie Porter after she left Congress and her previously Republican-leaning Orange County seat to run for the U.S. Senate, a race that she ultimately lost to Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff out here in California. But Schiff will become the next U.S. Senator from the Golden State. But Min's apparent victory means that Katie Porter's toss-up previously Republican seat in Orange County will remain in the Democratic column. The Republican, Baugh, a two-time candidate and Donald Trump supporter, had narrowly lost the seat 2 years ago to Porter, as some formerly solid Republican parts of California continue to move left, even in an election like the one that was held on November 5. In California's U.S. House District 45, a key swing seat, Republican Congresswoman Michelle Steele's lead has shrunk yet again on Tuesday evening to just 0.78% over her Democratic challenger, Derek Tran. Steele's win had appeared solid in the early counts right after Election Day, but Tran has been inching up consistently ever since. If the trajectory of votes over time continues on its current path, according to LAist, the district could flip blue, and that would be a blow to House Republicans, who had largely viewed that to be a safe seat since its creation through redistricting way back in 1980. It could also spell political trouble for Steele, as state senators criticized her recently after an LAist investigation found that she awarded a pandemic meals contract to her campaign mail vendor during her time as an Orange County supervisor before she was elected to Congress. And that comes on the heels of another red-to-blue flip out here in California in the 27th Congressional District, as Republican Congressman Mike Garcia conceded on Monday night to his Democratic challenger, George Whitesides. His win gives Democrats a much-needed leg up in their House battle in what was a Democratic stronghold for more than 20 years before Garcia took office back in 2020. In what also suffices for at least not horrific news today, Donald Trump had his first showdown with his upcoming Republican U.S. Senate majority on Wednesday following his election last week, and Donald Trump appears to have lost that showdown, as South Dakota Senator John Thune, a deputy to Mitch McConnell, was elected by the caucus as their new Senate majority leader, despite Trump and MAGA world loudly demanding that the position go to Florida Senator Rick Scott. It did not. Though Thune vowed to work closely with Trump, and Trump congratulated the 63-year-old senator on his new win as the new Senate leader, taking the role from the retiring, long-serving Mitch McConnell in a vote among the caucus on Wednesday. That is about all the new, not horrible news that I've got for you today. Bringing us to, well, some of the kind of crazy and or ridiculous or just plain horrific announcements of Trump nominations for his second administration. Donald Trump on Tuesday said Elon Musk and former GOP presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy will lead a new Department of Government Efficiency, which is not, despite the name, an actual government agency, as AP helpfully notes at the top of their coverage. The acronym for it, Doge, is a nod to Musk's favorite cryptocurrency, Dogecoin. Trump said in a statement that Musk and Ramaswamy will work from outside the government to offer the White House, quote, advice and guidance, and will partner with the Office of Management and Budget to, quote, drive large-scale structural reform and create an entrepreneurial approach to government never seen before. He added that the move would shock government systems. It's not clear how the organization will actually operate. It could come under the Federal Advisory Committee Act, which dictates how external groups that advise the government must operate and be accountable to the public. because I'm sure they'll follow those rules. Federal employees are generally required to disclose their assets and entanglements to ward off potential conflicts of interest and divest from significant holdings relating to their work. But because Musk and Ramaswamy would not be officially federal workers, well, they won't face those requirements or ethical limitations. Trump said in his statement that the two will, quote, pave the way for my administration to dismantle government bureaucracy, slash excess regulations, cut wasteful expenditures, and restructure federal agencies.
And ensure that government contracts continue to go to favored people.
Lisa Gilbert, co-president of our friends at the government watchdog outlet Public Citizen, said the purpose of government regulations is to protect the American people. We all depend on those regulations to protect our air, water, workers, children's safety, and much more. Cutting red tape, she says, is shorthand for getting rid of the safeguards that protect us in order to benefit corporate interests. Our problem is corporate capture of so much of our public policy, not this lie that corporations are held back by too many rules. Placing Musk, the ultimate corporate tycoon, in authority over government efficiency, she said, is laughable. He knows nothing about government efficiency and regulation. His own businesses have regularly run afoul of the very rules that he will now be in a position to attack in his new czar position. This is the ultimate corporate corruption, she says. If anyone had any doubts whether the Trump government aims to serve regular people or the billionaires, they should now be resolved. Our friend and veteran journalist Russ Baker of Who, What, Why tweeted out after the news, quote, rule number one of government efficiency, award as many federal dollars as possible to Elon Musk companies.
Bingo.
Yes, he receives billions of dollars from the federal government. I suspect he'll be earning even more in the years ahead. And I'm sure that those dollars are just the efficient ones that don't need any trimming.
Yeah.
Trump has reportedly stunned the Pentagon and the defense world by nominating Fox News host Pete Hegseth to serve as his defense secretary, tapping someone who is without experience and completely untested on the global stage to take over the world's largest and most powerful military. The news was met with bewilderment and worry among many in Washington as Trump passed on a number of established national security heavy hitters and chose instead an Army National Guard major, well known in right-wing circles as a co-host of Fox and Friends Weekend. They couldn't even get the daily host. They had to go with a weekend guy. In June, at a rally in Las Vegas, Trump encouraged his supporters to buy Hegseth's book and said that if he won the presidency, quote, the woke stuff will be gone within a period of 24 hours, whatever that means. Trump lauded Hegseth as tough, smart, and a true believer in America first, unquote. But others were quick to point to the TV personality's utter lack of experience. Quote, there is reason for concern that this is not a person who is a serious policymaker to do a successful job, said Congressman Adam Smith of Washington, the ranking Democrat on the House Armed Services Committee. A defense industry lobbyist was more blunt in a comment to Politico, saying, quote, who the F is this guy? Adding that they'd expected, quote, someone who actually has a background in defense. If confirmed, Hegseth would face a daunting array of global crises, from the wars in the Middle East and Ukraine and the expanding alliance between Russia and North Korea to the growing competition with China. The Defense Department has a budget exceeding $800 billion with about 1.3 million active duty troops and another 1.4 million in the National Guard, reserves, and civilian employees based worldwide. And a Fox News weekend guy will now be in charge of all of that, presuming he is confirmed in the U.S. Senate. We will see. But wait, there is more. Former Democratic Congresswoman, veteran, and failed presidential candidate turned kind of weirdo Republican, Tulsi Gabbard, has been named as Trump's nominee for Director of National Intelligence. Okay, and topping the charts, as we go to air today, Donald Trump announced that he will nominate Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida as the next U.S. Attorney General. That on the heels of the Justice Department investigation into Gaetz' own alleged sexual trafficking of minors. Our friend at Public Citizen were also the first out of the gates. See what I did there? with a statement from co-president Robert Weissman, who says, quote, "It's hard to imagine a worse and more unqualified candidate for attorney general. The U.S. Senate should put party allegiance and Trump fealty aside and reject this uniquely awful pick for AG. As a member of Congress, Gaetz has demonstrated contempt for the rule of law, truth, and decency. He is singularly unqualified to lead an agency that enforces civil rights laws and environmental protection statutes. Under Gaetz, we'd have every reason to expect an America where corporate criminals walk free, but immigrants and people of color are harassed or rounded up with minimal pretext. Matt Gaetz, who loudly says that January 6th was not an insurrection and who introduced legislation intended to protect January 6th Capitol riot defendants from federal prosecution, is not an appropriate pick for the position that defends the rule of law for our nation," said Weissman. Gaetz would lead a vengeful, authoritarian, and lawless Department of Justice. Well, of course he would. That's why he was chosen. Which also begs the question, what rule of law? Do we even still have one? Certainly not judging from what will now happen to the four, count them four, criminal cases still pending against the guy who just won the White House, as those cases, some or perhaps all of them, appear to be coming to an end. We're joined next by Marcy Wheeler of Empty Wheel. Straight ahead on the broadcast, I'm Brad Friedman, because I told you things were going south today.
Five major corporations now control more than 80% of the media in the United States, but they don't control us. The broadcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. You can make a difference. Support independent media. Drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
This is the end, beautiful friend.
Oh, it's not that bad. It's not the end. Maybe it's just the beginning. Although that doesn't make me feel much better. Anyway, welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Special counsel Jack Smith, who pursued two federal prosecutions against Donald J. Trump, plans to finish his work and resign along with other members of his team before Trump takes office in January, sources tell the New York Times' Devlin Barrett and Glenn Thrush today. Mr. Smith's goal, they said, is to not leave any significant part of his work for others to complete and to get ahead of the president-elect's promise to fire him within, quote, 2 seconds of being sworn in. Smith, who since taking office 2 years ago has operated under the once bedrock American principle that not even a powerful ex-president is above the law, now finds himself on the defensive, they say, as he rushes to wind down a pair of complex investigations slowed by the courts and ultimately made moot by Trump's electoral victory. The election's outcome spelled the end of the federal case against Trump, since Justice Department policy, that's policy, not law, not constitutional restrictions, but longstanding DOJ policy since the Nixon era, has long held that a sitting president cannot be prosecuted for crimes. A ruling, however, by the corrupted Republican U.S. Supreme Court majority this past summer expanded on that policy by finding a heretofore unknown provision in the U.S. Constitution that somehow gives total, complete immunity for virtually all criminal behavior carried out by a president while in office. The previously unknown provision described by Chief Justice John Roberts in his ruling for the activist majority would seem to be in direct contradiction, of course, with 2005's Judge John Roberts during his Senate confirmation hearings for the seat that he now holds on the High Court.
I believe that no one is above the law under our system, and that includes the president. The president is fully bound by the law, the Constitution, and statutes.
That was fun. That was 2005. Apparently, just as when he and all of his fellow Republicans also testified during Senate confirmation hearings that they believed that Roe v. Wade was the settled law of the land. All of that, apparently, just kidding. Psych. Department regulations call for special counsels, in this case Jack Smith, to file a report summarizing his investigation and his decisions. Documents that may now stand as the final accounting from a prosecutor who filed extensive charges against a former president but never got those cases to trial. It is now clear how quickly, it is not clear, I should say, how quickly he can finish this work, leaving uncertain whether it would these reports could be made public before the Biden administration leaves office. A big question now, according to the Times. Assuming Mr. Smith finishes the report on his current schedule, the question is whether Attorney General Merrick Garland will release those findings before he leaves office or defer the release to the Trump team, which might not make its contents public, which, frankly, to me, seems unthinkable. But aside from the federal charges against Trump, there are two pending criminal cases in state courts as well, one of which is the only criminal case which managed to get to trial and conviction before the election. The New York State case, in which a jury unanimously found Donald Trump guilty of 34 felony counts of fraud related to hush money payments to a porn star just before the 2016 election to help him cheat to win his first time he ran for office. Well, that one is currently stalled in light of the U.S. Supreme Court's presidential immunity decision and the Trump re-election. Prosecutors in Manhattan on Tuesday asked Judge Juan Merchan for a pause in the case, which he granted, in order to assess their next steps. They have now until November 19 to alert the court to their plans, with sentencing against Trump still set, at least for the moment, for later in November. And, of course, there is the broad conspiracy case against Trump and his 18 co-defendants in Fulton County, Georgia, related to their alleged attempts to steal the state's 2020 election from Joe Biden. Joining us now for status updates on all of these cases and related matters is one of our longtime go-to friends who has been following all of them as close or closer than anyone in the world over the past 4 years. Marcy Wheeler is an independent national security journalist at her site emptywheel.net and a contributor over the years to many other publications, including The Guardian, Politico, New York Times, and others. Oh, Marcy Wheeler, welcome back to the broadcast during yet another grim moment in the never-ending quest for presidential accountability. Maybe someday we'll get some, eh?
I wish it were in better circumstances, but thanks for having me on.
You bet. So I thought of you immediately on election night as it was becoming clear that this was going to, you know, that he was going to win again, and that at least some of his criminal cases, perhaps all for him, if not necessarily his co-conspirators, would essentially disappear along with that win. So I just want to sort of step through very quickly each of these cases to understand what will or won't happen with them in the wake of his second term in office, and what, if anything, we might learn from what has happened here. Let's start with the federal cases first, Marcy, beginning with the stolen documents case. Trump stole thousands of pages of highly classified national security documents upon leaving office the last time. He refused to give them back when repeatedly asked by the government to do so. That case was already dismissed by the Trump-appointed U.S. District Judge Eileen Cannon in Florida, who claimed that Jack Smith was somehow unconstitutionally assigned as a special counsel. That decision is on appeal to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, but what happens next? Does the appeal disappear if Jack Smith resigns, as reported?
Well, there's been reporting by people smarter than Devlin Barrett that DOJ as an entity wants to sustain, to continue to fight that appeal. And there's reason for it that's kind of interesting, which is if the Eileen Cannon decision remains intact, then several other people, their cases will probably be challenged significantly. One of those people is Alexander Smirnoff, the guy who allegedly tried to frame Joe Biden with mm-hmm. a bribery claim.
Right.
The more interesting of those is Hunter Biden,
mm-hmm.
because they were both, David Weiss was appointed under the same process that Jack Smith was. They both appealed the constitutionality of David Weiss's appointment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think it's quite possible that Smirnoff will be among the people who get a pardon because he's, you know, he helped to frame Joe Biden. What else could you like in a Trump administration?
Uh-huh.
But obviously Hunter Biden is a different person. And so one thing they might do there is dismiss the case against Trump and spin the rest of it back to DOJ, hoping that the 11th Circuit at least overturns Eileen Cannon before Matt Gaetz, who reportedly is going to be attorney general, moves to get rid of it.
Yeah, that news is just breaking that Congressman Matt Gaetz will be named by Donald Trump to be his attorney general. But I just want to be clear on this case. So the 11th Circuit is still going to decide it in theory. And you're saying that they could just say that, OK, Eileen Cannon's decision can stand, but it doesn't apply to these other cases like Hunter Biden's?
No. I'm saying if they just dismissed Trump, but remember, Trump had two co-defendants in that case.
Right.
Walt Nassa and Carlos mm-hmm. de Oliveira.
Right.
And so if they just dismissed the case against Trump, then the appeal would remain because there are still two defendants.
Right.
So I don't know if that's what they're going to do, but that is an option. I mean, one of the things people forget is there are two co-defendants in the documents case.
Mm-hmm.
There are seven uncharged co-conspirators in the January 6th case.
Right.
How Jack Smith deals with them is a very interesting question that people have kind of forgotten about.
I haven't. I've been wondering about mm-hmm. that. I was going to ask you about it. And of course, in both of those cases, those are federal cases. Donald Trump could certainly just pardon those co-conspirators, whether they're indicted or unindicted. Different case in the state cases. We'll get to that in a minute. But given the court's, you know, ridiculous immunity ruling, as I see it, does that also now mean, as long as we're on stolen documents, does it also now mean that Trump can simply steal America's most highly protected, most top security documents again during a second term, or even sell them to anyone that he likes with the assurance that he's got complete and total impunity and immunity to do so?
Absolutely. And this is why I think the report is going to be a really important document.
Why Jack Smith's report in these cases?
Yes.
Right.
I don't think the New York Times reporting, I think it's kind of foolish, to be honest with you. Jack
How so?
Smith, when he got the case back in August,
mm-hmm.
he asked for a delay, similar to the delay he just asked for in the DC case. And I said when he asked for the delay, oh, he's going to supersede. He's going to supersede to take the upper hand going forward. And that's what he did. It tightened up the indictment, but also had some other conversations about how to move forward. We don't know what those conversations were.
Mm.
And when there were reports that Jack Smith was going to shut down, everyone, of course, panicked because it seems like a capitulation. The cases are going to end. But I suspect that Jack Smith was already thinking about what he would do if Trump won and the way in which to leave the best record available. Now, they have asked Judge Chutkan, this is the D.C. case, they've asked Judge Chutkan until December 2nd to tell her what they're going to do if she doesn't find out already. And I suspect that they will be substantially done with something by that point. And if they are, it means Dick Durbin is still the Senate Judiciary Committee chair.
For
it
now.
Means that they not only can, but it means they not only can release the report, but they can get a hearing in front of Dick Durbin.
What would that hearing do? For what reason would they want a hearing in front of Dick Durbin?
Well, the biggest, I mean, one of the things, Greg Sargent had an article about how when Kamala Harris came in as candidate, she discovered, I mean, like, she faced the reality, which is that Democrats hadn't disqualified Donald Trump because of his legal issues. They just thought that would happen by the court.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a terrific political mistake for Democrats to sit there going, oh, I'm going to have a magical pony and his name might be Jack Smith and he'll just make this all go away. There is almost certainly no way that Jack Smith could have disqualified Donald Trump for president. Mitch McConnell could have done it. John Roberts could have done it. Jack Smith almost certainly could not have done it in time before the election.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk about that. And so what the report, the way I'm thinking of the report is, this is what the Republican Party stands for. This is the risk that John Roberts is on the hook for. This is what he has said is legal. And when John Roberts wrote that opinion, he had literally no idea what actually happened on January 6th. And he also, I think, you know, one of the things about the six Republicans on the Supreme Court is they're all pickled in Fox News propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that they believed certain things about the cases against Donald Trump and didn't take very seriously some of the things Jack Smith likely is looking at. And so in a report, he not only gets to say, here are the two cases I've charged against Donald Trump, and here's the reasons I charged that, but he can also make declination discussions. He can say, I thought about charging him for something that was completely crazy, but even I thought that that might fit under official conduct.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm telling you that we couldn't charge it, but that he did it. And so I think people's scope of what the report is just wildly wrong, is just wildly uncreative, is sort of divorced from what we've even seen in the court filings.
And so that is the sort of thing that could come out in both of these reports, I guess, on both of these cases. And you're suggesting that
Sure, yeah.
He would be called before Dick Durbin in the U.S. Senate to basically have hearings on this and let Jack Smith tell the story in sort of a high profile way that wouldn't otherwise happen. I'm understanding that correctly?
Yeah, I mean, I would expect a report is going to get a lot of attention anyway, but I mean, the traditional press has just been supine on this issue, with some exceptions. But even that New York Times report, I don't think is very good. Neither of those are established DOJ journalists, right? I mean, Devlin is, but Devlin has gotten most things about this investigation wrong. And so I think that, and very few people, for example, noticed what I did, which is that when Jack Smith got the case back in August, he said, how can I make the most of this terrible situation? And he did a pretty reasonable job, and he released the immunity brief, you know, a 180-page brief in October that a lot of people didn't look at. And so I think that one of the things that people who believe in rule of law need to do is put on their schedule in December, figure out how they are going to use this report to hold Republicans accountable for what they have done.
Is it even conceivable, Thrush and Barrett end their report by noting that there's a question about whether Merrick Garland would release the findings of that report before leaving office, or what, or that he would perhaps defer it to the Trump team?
No. I mean, come on. That's stupid.
It seems Merrick like it
Garland
to me.
Merrick Garland released both of the special counsel reports he got within days. So assuming he gets a report by January 16th, it will be released. And my suspicion is he's going to get a report a lot sooner than that.
Let's turn to, for the moment, some of the state cases. They're sort of a different animal since, you know, presumably the Supreme Court's absurd immunity ruling doesn't affect state charges per se. But yet, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg's office on Tuesday in the case in New York that successfully found Trump guilty on 34 counts of fraud related to the hush money payments to Stormy Daniels. Alvin Bragg's office has asked for a pause before currently scheduled sentencing later this month. What is going on there in their request for that pause?
Well, I think they're trying to figure out what their legal options are. I mean, I don't know, and I've seen dramatically different takes on what can happen with that, because I don't think anyone is going to ask a sitting president to appeal that decision while he is a sitting president. Perhaps they're researching whether they can just hold the case for the 4 years that he's president.
Mm.
Of course, unprecedented. They also, Judge Merchan, I think, genuinely is looking at whether certain of the evidence that came in really would have to get thrown out. For example, what Hope Hicks said to Donald Trump when she was his top communications advisor.
Because in the immunity ruling, they said that you also can't even question an incident that takes place under a sitting president that he's involved with. And there was some evidence in that case that came from, as you said, Hope Hicks explaining what happened during a meeting in the Oval Office at one point.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, Merchan, even before he gets to that decision, is going to have to say, would the case stand without the Hope Hicks testimony, if he believes that that's an official act?
Uh-huh.
So it's a complex issue. And, you know, and frankly, I would expect that Matt Gaetz's DOJ is going to start trying to find a way to charge Alvin Bragg within 3 months of his assuming the office. So
Bragg. What did Alvin Bragg do?
Republicans in Congress have been going after the prosecutors in these cases for a long time, and they're gonna try and get more creative ways to do so.
Oh man.
So and Steve Bannon is also trying to delay his case in New York.
Right.
Presumably because he thinks he's got some way to get rid of the prosecutor.
Yeah. Good luck with that. But now back to, for the moment, to the hush money sentencing in that case. I mean, even if the U.S. Supreme Court eventually rules that, you know, a sitting president, can't be bothered to make appeals in his criminal case, can't be imprisoned during his term of office on state charges, which I would understand, does anything prevent the judge from actually going ahead with sentencing anyway, either sentencing him monetarily or even sentencing him to jail in sort of a deferred sentence to begin on, you know, January 21, 2028, the day that he would supposedly no longer be the sitting president? Anything stop the judge from doing that?
There's no precedent, so nobody knows, right? There's no precedent. So I really don't know what to make of, and I don't think anyone knows. We'll wait and see on the New York case. There's a lot that could go on there.
All right, let's go to Georgia then. The case brought by Fulton County District Attorney Fonnie Willis, that has been paused now for months in the appeals court over whether Willis herself, who easily, by the way, won her own re-election as district attorney last week in Atlanta, questions of whether she can continue on that case. That case charges Trump and 18 co-conspirators for trying to steal the 2020 election in Georgia. What happens in that case? And as noted, there's 18 co-conspirators. Even if somehow Trump is let off the hook, presumably the case can still go forward against them. But what's the status there?
I mean, it is a real appeal. of whether Fannie Willis can go forward. So we do have to see what comes out. I mean, it may be that her poor judgment gets the entire thing thrown out, in which case it's gone. And that's not anything that comes from Donald Trump's privilege. It comes from the good lawyering of a bunch of people on which Donald Trump didn't even take the lead. So, but if her authority stands, if she remains in the case, then the case starts moving towards trial. Just yesterday or sometime this week, I've lost track, the Supreme Court denied Mark Meadows's effort to get the case moved to the federal. So you would have, I mean, I've lost count of how many people have not pled out. I think it's something like 13. You would move towards trial with these people, and it would presumably be noisy, and it would implicate Donald Trump's actions, and it would implicate it would be another thing that I think Democrats could use, not just Democrats, because I think a lot of people believe in the Constitution, but people could use to say, this is what the Republicans have become, and try and sell voters on the import of basic things like elections.
So if that case moves forward, if Fannie Willis is not removed from the case, if it moves forward as planned, but Donald Trump is not a part of it, there's nothing that, at least the Supreme Court has not yet made a ruling that, you can't even have a trial that implicates a president of the United States. That trial could move forward over the next year, two, three, 4 years in Georgia.
Right. And, you know, some of the actions charged there, Trump is one of the co-conspirators, but there are side aspects of the conspiracy and Rudy Giuliani makes a perfect figurehead for this conspiracy all by himself. Right?
Yeah, he's one of them, one of the 18 co-conspirators in Georgia that's charged criminally.
And so you can hang it all around Rudy. Like, Rudy lied and lied and lied and got people threatened and got people in Georgia to lie for him. And that's a story you can tell, and it doesn't necessarily implicate Donald Trump.
And so just to be clear, because that is a state case, along with the New York hush money case, in both of those cases, Trump can neither pardon himself as president, nor can he pardon any of his co-defendants, either in Georgia or New York, because those are state cases. So there's really nothing that he can do to really throw a lifeline to those 18 co-conspirators in Georgia, right?
Well, caveating that I said the Republicans are going to find some way to go after these prosecutors.
Okay.
But yeah.
Right. And what happens to the civil cases, Marcy Wheeler, against Trump? The New York Attorney General Letitia James's successful $355 million fraud verdict against him and his sons and some other top executives. E. Jean Carroll's nearly $90 million sexual assault verdict. Does anything with his election prevent those from moving forward, or is he still on the hook for those no matter what?
I don't actually know in that case. I mean, I think that some of that will stand and some won't necessarily stand. I think I'm less sure about what's going to happen with those. And there's other cases that implicate Donald Trump that, for example, AJ Delgado is still suing Trump's first presidential campaign for sexual, gender, and pregnancy discrimination. And that one is moving towards, it either gets dismissed or it goes to trial. And again, Donald Trump is not the defendant in that case, but it's the kind of thing where you could have his sexism and his, there was an NDA involved in this as well, implicated. He can't do anything about that, right? So there are cases that implicate Donald Trump's conduct that could be going on as he's acting as president, because he's not, this is the thing I've been saying for a long time. Donald Trump's biological and executive person will be immune, but it's actually, he's got so many corporate entities that they're not necessarily immune. And I think people need to think a lot more about that.
Well, but these cases, these are completed cases. The fraud case, Letitia James fraud case, the E. Jean Carroll case. I mean, they can be appealed.
I think he may be able to delay collection because he was appealing, and he can't be expected to appeal his fraud and slander cases while he's president, probably continuing to slander these people.
Okay, well, yeah, I was going to say good luck with that, but you're right. He can get away with anything. I mean, you can go to U.S. Supreme Court and say, hey, man, I can't face, I can't pay appeal a verdict in state case while I'm president, and they will probably agree. Marcy Wheeler, I know that you have fiercely defended Attorney General Merrick Garland's prosecution of the federal cases against Trump and his cronies. And yet,
no, I haven't.
Okay.
No,
oh, well, I don't.
I haven't.
Okay. Well, I don't want to.
I have.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I have defended the facts, and that gets me treated, dismissed as a defender. All I have said from the start is we know things happen that you're not accounting for in your narrative, and therefore your claim should be dismissed because you know you're saying things didn't happen, and we know they happened. So there's a big distinction there between. I'm defending Merrick Garland, and I'm defending basic factual reality.
Fair enough. And what I'm getting at here is that there has been, yet another round of attacks on Garland. He disastrously failed, since Trump's reelection. And arguably, he did fail to complete any of the federal criminal cases against Trump. So my question is, what responsibility, if any, does he bear in all of this as you see it?
I think people who believe in democracy need to look at what happened with the cases. I saw Jamelle Bouie today said, we need a 14th Amendment that does these things so the presidents can be held accountable. And he got it. The main issues why these cases didn't go forward. I mean, the reason these cases didn't go forward is very simple. Trump committed a coup using 25 lawyers, using encryption, and using the office of the president. And you can look at 2.5 years of the investigation that was eaten up with those things, more actually.
Mm-hmm.
And another arguably 3 to 7 months that the January 6th committee frivolously wasted by withholding their transcripts. I mean, there's the time that it took.
Mm.
And in spite of that time, I mean, I can, you know, there's the time. But even if you could have made that time go away, and you couldn't, because again, the only thing Merrick Garland or Jack Smith could have done to disqualify Donald Trump from running as president is to prosecute him on insurrection charges. Now, first of all, that rule was not written until March and July of this year. Those two, the Colorado case and the immunity case together, say the only way you can disqualify the president, disqualify somebody who has engaged in these crimes from becoming president again, is to convict him of insurrection. Now, given what we know about the case and even things like COVID delayed everything for 14 months for everybody, it would not have been possible for anybody, in my opinion, to take an insurrection case against Donald Trump until at the earliest June of 2023, because you can't do it until the Proud Boys have already gone to trial, which, by the way, the Proud Boys is the trial that the January 6th committee delayed. So if you can't charge Trump with insurrection until June 2023 anyway, and he's charged with charges that by all appearances would be easier in August of 2023, that's the delta that you're talking about. Those are the, like, you don't know what rules John Roberts is going to rewrite in a year. But it was a decent approach. And then in August 7th of this year, Jack Smith had 2 weeks basically to say, do you want to charge Donald Trump with insurrection in this moment before the election? Is it even, you know, again, this is a regulation that may have been prohibited it.
Mm-hmm.
And you won't be able to go to trial if he wins anyway. Do you want to do that? And that's really the one decision that you can point at where Jack Smith, Merrick Garland. I don't care if Adam Schiff had been running the investigation. That's the only question that possibly could have disqualified Donald Trump. Without that, you need Mitch McConnell impeaching him, or you need John Roberts not rewriting the Constitution.
Yeah,
and the other thing that's important is, you know, when I said the Democrats thought he would just be disqualified by being charged, that's a failure of policy. And this is where I think Democrats and everybody who's been complaining really needs to take a step back and say, I mean, I think the January 6th committee did a superb job of making this a political issue until they finished, right? But mm-hmm. then it dropped. And for 8 years, Republicans have been chipping away at the rule of law on all of these other issues. And that is what allowed Donald Trump to turn a completely manufactured grievance into a campaign tool rather than an impediment to running again. And that is 100% a political failure. And it's a political failure that long precedes Joe Biden's administration. And until Democrats can start doing something about that, then you're simply, you know, one of the other things that's going to happen, Brad, is all of these Jan 6ers are going to be released, probably including the seditionists, right?
The seditionists,
until we can make Republicans pay a price for that. There, you know, I don't know where you would think. I mean, you know, Matt Gaetz is going to be attorney general after having been investigated for years on allegations that he was trafficking minors, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Republican Party as a whole has decided that they do not believe in rule of law anymore. And it's not surprising then that they're running candidates like Donald Trump successfully, because the Democrats have not made them pay a price for that. But hell, the Democrats didn't even make a compelling case that Joe Biden was better on crime than Donald Trump, which is, unquestionably true.
Right.
But they never were able to break through and make that case. And meanwhile, the traditional journalists are letting Donald Trump claim he's tough on crime without asking him, what about those fraud charges and the rape allegations? You know, like, there's so much freebies that Donald Trump gets in his false claims of adhering to rule of law.
Yep.
And unless you reverse that, you are never going to hold him to account on anything.
Which, as far as I'm concerned, brings me back again. And we've been talking about this day after day since the election, brings me back to the media failure. You know, Democrats are going to succeed or they're going to fail. That's up to them. Politicians are sometimes good, sometimes bad. But that's why we have the media. That's why the media has dispensation in the Constitution, freedom of speech, freedom of the press. I find the failures there to be inexcusable. But that's why we also still have, for now anyway, the independent media and folks like Marcy Wheeler. Marcy, I got to get out. Thank you so much. She is the independent national security journalist at emptywheel.net. You can still find her, I believe, on the site we still call Twitter at emptywheel. And emptywheel.net. There you go. Thanks, Marcy. We'll
be talking. Increasingly at Blue Sky, Empty Wheel at Blue Sky. So
very good. Well, maybe I'll be seeing you over there myself pretty soon. Empty Wheel at Blue Sky, bsky.net, however they say it. Thank you, Marcy. We'll talk soon.
Hang in there, Brad.
I'm hanging. Rather be hanging together than hanging alone, as they say.
Yeah, that's one way of looking at it. One thing on the nominations that Trump has been making, these bonkers nominations, Tom Nichols of The Atlantic said that these might be a way for Trump to soften up in order to say, okay, Republicans will reject Matt Gaetz, but here's somebody even worse that I'm going to nominate here. And also,
well, that's some 3D chess playing.
True,
to
but
imagine
he also
that's the case.
Given
Donald Trump way more credit than he deserves, because I don't think people remember how much of a clown show, how much of a dumpster fire was his previous, his first term in office. So suddenly he's a super genius, a super political genius. Don't count
just
on
Blair,
it. Anyway,
well,
yeah.
Well, and another option is that, you know, this could just be distraction while the non-nominated, non-confirmed roles get about taking care of mass deportation and purging the civil service. But beyond that, there's also some interesting commentary from Barb McQuaid. She's a former U.S. attorney. She said that Jack Smith and the Justice Department do have some options to end the Trump cases on their own terms. One of those options includes dismissing without prejudice so that the cases can be refiled in 4 years and that there is a way to get around the statute of limitations. They would have to argue that it is held off for the next 4 years because Trump
because
is president.
In office.
So that's another potential wrinkle to all of this.
Unlike you, to try to find the bright side in all of this, I guess we have to go digging there, but okay.
Yes, we'll find it if we can.
4 years from now, refile the cases all over again. I will take it, by the way. I'm not against it, but gosh, that kind of seems like A, a long way away, and B, kind of a long shot, but I don't know.
And who knows what happens in the meantime.
We will take the hope where we can get it. Exactly.
Yes.
All right, we got to get out. Thanks again to Marcy of EmptyWheel.net, to my producer, Desi Doyen, and to all of you for sticking with us today, tolerating all of this darkness. Sorry about that. If you missed any portion of today's show or just want to relive it again, you can do so over at bradblog.com, where all of our programs are available for free. Going back to the beginning of time. Thanks to those of you kind enough to drop a little something in the tip jar for us by hitting one of those donate buttons. We could really use your support right now. A one-time donation or signing up for an automated monthly donation of any amount you can afford would be greatly appreciated. Drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and site still known as Twitter, I am The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Listening to the Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.